мною принято решение о проведении специальной военной операции.
We are under attack. It is an attack against Western democracies and on the institutions that bind them.
What Russia is much more interested in doing is depicting the West as a failure.
Regiment President Yanukovych, they were trying to protect their enormous wealth.
This is Kremlin File.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Kremlin Files Week in Review. Hey, Olga, we ready to go?
Yes, we are, and welcome, everyone. We will fill you in, basically, on the top stories Mo and I have been watching this week, and we'll also make sure to put the links in for anyone who wants to look further into the story into our Kremlin File Substack. Go ahead, Mo. Let's start. Yeah,
let's go. Let's rock and roll. Now, first story, okay, that has caused a bit of a stir in the press, and Canada joins a slowly growing list of different countries that are open to sending non-combat troops to Ukraine. And here I'm talking about the Dutch, Estonians, the Lithuanian governments have said that they're not opposed. Okay, while there are some countries who have come out and said, no, nine, we know who that is. Okay, yeah. Speaking of which, okay, Germany will not give up its Tauruses, saying that they have a range of 700 kilometers or miles. I don't know which one it is, to tell you the truth, but okay, that's the story there. Now, this piece of news actually followed from statements that were made by Macron on Monday following a European ministers meeting. So saying that France was open to the idea, okay, of this. Not that necessarily it's going to happen tomorrow, but they could also be troops stationed as, okay, we both know, in non-combat positions. Okay, so that's the first one. Exactly. Then, Olga, you're up next.
Yeah, and speaking to Taurus, Schultz's reasoning is he is scared that Ukraine will hit Moscow. So now Schultz seems to be representing, or at least concerned about the interest of Russia versus, you know, Germany, Europe, and Ukraine, and Russia's, you know, aggression and illegal war and genocide campaign against Ukraine. So it's crazy. But moving on, today is Navalny's funeral after, you know, Russia tried to hide the body, refused to give back the body of Navalny to his mother. Finally, she was able to receive the body and she was able to have a burial today. Interestingly enough, Putin demanded over this past week that FSB, which is Russia's security services, do everything they can to prevent a rebellion. He was very scared of, you know, a rebellion happening, of there being chaos and potential, you know, any challenge to his rule on the Tsarist throne. And this apparently, according to the Moscow Times, a Russian official told them anonymously, Navalny's funeral is a stress test for Russian authorities. This topic was one of the most important at meetings involving Kremlin officials.
Interesting. And staying, okay, in Russia for a moment, unless you wanted to add something else on this? No. Staying in Russia for a moment, I believe it was yesterday, Putin did his annual 45-hour address in front of a sleeping audience, okay, wishing that they were, you know, in a bar someplace downing vodka. Instead, he, of course, okay, talked about the mothers and all of this kind of BS, more whatever, okay, that, I mean, he keeps promising that every single year, and we know what the infrastructure is like. Okay, and life is like outside of Moscow.
No toilets for 30% of the population.
Exactly. But what was picked up by the press was his saber-rattling nuclear saber rattling once again. Okay, so they spent the better part, okay, of this week reminding the West that they have nuclear weapons and leaked, in fact, a secret classified docs on their part of the fear-mongering, okay, operation that they have put, okay, in place. We're going to include the link to this story in the show notes and in the description, okay? So take a look at it and that kind of thing. Anything you want to add on this?
Yes. Look, Russia is constantly, you know, showcasing and reminding the West, you know, that they have nuclear weapons, although with mass amounts of corruption, I highly doubt that these, you know, are operational, or at least will go where Russia attempts to send it. We've seen it just, you know, from their, they call it weapons inside of Ukraine and the condition of it. But my biggest thing with this is that, yes, Russia will continue to threaten with nukes. This leaking of, you know, classified documents of you know, showing the low threshold Russia now has to launch nukes, I mean, is a fear-mongering operation. And my biggest concern is that the West continues, Western media, to help Russia, you know, inadvertently push this disinformation and fear-mongering operations while reporting this. And that's my biggest thing, because I mean, I've heard about you know, Russian nukes on CNN the past few days, and I'm like, come on guys, just give a disclaimer. You know, you don't have to, maybe you could report it, but then at least add something to it, not just state it as fact. You know, and even they took this Financial Times story seriously. I mean, look, in Russia you can't even like a post without being arrested, you know, and charged as a terrorist, or, you know, whatever other charge they do. How in the hell is someone going to take out, you know, nuclear documents and hand it over to a newspaper from Russia? You know, and no one questions this. So that's my biggest issue with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Do better.
Do better. Do better. Also, another thing that came out as well was that Kremlin operatives in Transnistria appealed to Russia to send quote unquote peacekeeping forces, but stop short of asking to officially join Russia. Okay, so this is again Transnistria. Olga, can we remind everybody where Transnistria is and if it is important in the grand
it's
scheme of
extremely
things?
Yeah, it's extremely important. I had written about, you know, Russia's operations against Moldova a few years ago, because Russia did this actually in Transnistria after they launched the full-scale invasion of Ukraine. They were using Transnistria, you know, as kind of a lever that they can pull at any time to threaten Europe and to threaten Moldova. So Transnistria has been occupied by Russia since 93, for the most part, you know, for the better half, since the collapse of the Soviet Union. Pretty much the whole time, the entire time. And Russia has their, you know, forces based there for the past, you know, few decades, since the 90s. And they use Transnistria as, you know, a way to threaten Moldova, to threaten Europe, to put pressure on Europe by, you know, threatening that they will broaden the, you know, war in Europe. And Transnistria is definitely a point for that. And now with Putin, you know, and his fake election coming up, he now wants to basically show the Russian people how he's doing everything he can to restore, you know, the Russian Empire. And, you know, with news coming out that they asked for this peacekeeping force, I mean, I frankly would not be surprised if, you know, sooner or later they would ask.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
For Russia to sign papers to annex them and to put them under Russian control, like, you know, at least by Russia standards, on paper, it could happen at any time, you know. Yeah. Will it change anything on the ground? No. I mean, Ukrainians are keeping an eye on it very closely because this can be, you know, a launching pad for Odessa. But it's not going to make a difference what they say.
Yeah.
The troubling thing is that every country really, really needs to get these Russian agents out of their country in order to stabilize their own country.
Tell me about it. Good news is that Prime Minister Maya Sandu, met with Zelensky, this week in meetings. So they probably talked about either how to shore up their defenses, all right, in the area itself. Now, let's go on to, I think, at this point, Sweden. And then I'd like you to pick up the story, that is coming out of the Middle East. This is just to say that Sweden will cut financial support to the branch of the Russian Orthodox Church. The ROC is what we usually put in our Substacks for short. Due to the suspicion of espionage. I'd also like to add that there are heavy infiltrations of the same in Finland, and there are investigations ongoing there, and on to you.
I'll add that the Russian Orthodox Church, for the well over a century, is a front for Russian intelligence operations, is controlled by Russian intelligence services, and unfortunately is the only Russian intelligence, mechanism that has not been touched since the full-scale invasion. For the most part, the Russian Orthodox churches are operating across the globe, there have really not been sanctions put on it. I think maybe in Korea, the patriarch, who was a KGB agent who, during the Soviet Union, his job was to, infiltrate religious organizations and, the WOC?
The World Congress of Families?
Yes. So that was his job. And then the patriarch prior to him, Alexei, was also a KGB agent. And basically, this is what it is. So the fact that Sweden finally is doing this, it's good. And I believe it was maybe Latvia last year who also had ties with the church and
Estonia,
For national security threats, Ukraine has did the same several years ago. Anyone who's from, this part of the world knows that.
They know that.
Olga,
we need to get Ruslan back to talk about this, because I know that, he's done a lot of research. You have as well. So would be a great chat, to have with him. And remember, everybody, please go and listen to his episode, because he is just a fabulous analyst. And
he is.
Isn't he? Fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
I'd like you, before we end off with some other things, can you tell us what's happening in the Middle East?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, again, historically, Russia has supported terrorist organizations. This goes back to the Soviet Union. I don't think there's one terrorist organization they have not supported, including Hezbollah, Hamas, they work closely with the IRGC. And now with the Houthis have continued to ramp up attacks against U.S. interests and its allies. And interestingly, mid-February, a Russian delegation flew to Yemen to meet with the prime minister. And the beginning of this week, the prime minister flew to Russia and was welcomed in Russia from Yemen.
Yes.
So I'm assuming, you know, I assume that they're, you know, working out more logistics, financing, and weapons for continued attacks against the United States. And
they
its
can't do
allies.
It from, exactly. They can't do it from a phone or from a cell. So it's like, okay, we got to go and visit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Let's go. All right. Now, I know, Olga, that you have done investigations and research on the next topic since 2015. It's the Wirecard, okay, Marsalek, all right, situation. Can you give us some information on that? Because I know that you know this stuff.
Yeah, there is a company with Wirecard. The COO was Jan Marsalek. Basically today, and I recommend everyone check out this story today. We'll put it into the Kremlin File Substack. It came out from the insider, basically providing more evidence that Marsalek was an operative of the GRU, which is Russia's military intelligence. Wall Street Journal last year came out also with an investigation showing that Marsalek was moving funds and for Wagner Group, which is Russia's mercenary terrorist organization, to fund covert operations in Africa and basically wherever Wagner operates. He's been a spy for the better half of 20, I mean, for the better half of like probably since 2010. He fled. Wirecard collapsed in 2020. He fled to Russia. Surprise, surprise. And has been living, you know, under the protection of security services inside of Russia. So I highly recommend looking into this investigation, because Wirecard is equivalent of, like, you know, I guess, I don't know what it would be in US. I guess maybe like PayPal or like
Yes, that's exactly
Stripe.
What it is.
Or
yes.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very, very big company. And it's, you know, so the fact that Russia leveraged the main person in this company, you know, and recruited them and used this company to move
That's
funds
right.
is, you know, interesting.
And
So,
that the German government, the German authorities gave the okay. I mean, it's
they
shocking.
Did and they didn't. They were investigating for quite a while. In 2020, they took action against Marsalek. He fled. They
True.
Put out an Interpol notice in 2020, but he
when
had
they
already
found
fled
out.
in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he fled to Moscow, so it was too late. He went through Belarus. So, I mean, for them, they were investigating. You know, unfortunately, investigations don't. Everyone
Sometimes
should speed up
we
their
need to get
investigation.
Natalie back on, our resident, okay, of
Yes.
exactly what went back in the background, because she would know. Okay. Now, sabotage by congressional, okay, Republicans continues, all right, this week as a vote for Ukraine aid is blocked. Okay, it is blocked. We're seeing no movement whatsoever, all right, in this regard. Speaker Johnson, if we want to call him that, did say, well, for want of another word,
Moscow, Mike.
Okay, you said it, I didn't. I'm thinking of other words as well, but let's just leave it at that. So Johnson did say that he will finally work on it. All right.
Maybe.
After the government, all right, shutdown bill after that. So they're going to, you know, they're going to keep this going and going and going. Each delay, as we both know, Olga, means Ukrainian lives. Okay, that's essentially it. Now, a lot of people have also been asking me, well, what is going on in Europe in terms of defense industry? Okay, and this week there were some statements, let's call them those, okay, ideas that are now going to be considered, okay, seriously, I believe, especially with what, you know, what's happening in the States. Thierry Breton, the EU's internal market commissioner, has said that Europe has to move into a war mode, war economy mode. This is an important statement, by the way. The EU rarely talks this way, okay? Warning that the bloc needed to produce more, faster, and together as Europeans, as part of a new defense industrial strategy. Breton, the EU's industrial chief, said that in Brussels, European defense must change the paradigm. This also means that European defense industry must take more risks with our support by giving them visibility. Okay, so this has been going on since, I believe, before Christmas, because, as I said, and I've stated this before, Charles Michel had already talked about some sort of strategy. Okay, so this is the situation there. The EU has dedicated 500 million euros to boosting production capacity. 500 million is not a lot at all. Okay.
No.
We know that there's a lot of, you know, just to get people on board with 27 countries in the EU, this is one of the problems that we always have. Anytime a decision has to be made, it has to be made unanimously. Now, they did it with COVID. They managed to get their act together with COVID. That was a different kind of attack. This is something even more important in my view. All right. Now, are we going to close this up with our last,
we are including three things to watch and read. The latest DFR lab report on Russia's disinformation operation against Ukraine. Two films, 20 Days in Mariupol, and an investigation by Vasilka. So we will be including this. And to finish up on a lighter note, and very ironical, especially with, you know, Russia's plans of nuking.
Can you hold that
satellite
thought for a second? Hold on a minute. Hold that thought, because I just want to say something about the film, Vasilka, which is about a Ukrainian restaurant in New York. So, okay, great movie to go and watch. All right. And I'm the reason why I'm also saying this is because my family has a restaurant. It's a family restaurant. It's been going on since over 60 years. So this is a restaurant that opened up in 1952 in New York, and it's Ukrainian. Okay, so they made a film, okay, about it. The other sad, obviously the tragic and incredible film to watch, hard to watch, is 20 Days in Mariupol. The only thing I'd like to add that before I turn it over to Olga for the close is that it's been awarded a BAFTA for, that's the British, okay, film industry award, the equivalent of the Oscars for best documentary. And it has also been nominated for an Oscar as for in the same category. So we'll be watching, okay, those kind of things. And now, go ahead, Olga, in for the close, babe.
So finishing up on a lighter and more ironical note, especially with all the news of Russia's, plans to nuke satellites in space and the U.S. government officials scrambling over the past few weeks to kind of calm down, you know, the panic that they initially set off, which was very bizarre to begin with. But Russia has arrested several people in their space military academy over what is considered like one of the bigger corruption mafia schemes and theft of money. Ooh. So just to show you, Russia being Russia, this is what they do.
Yeah.
Every agency is basically robbed. Every contract is robbed. And here and we have another.
And I remember, Olga, when we were looking at the situation, let's say just before 2022, February 2022. And I remember that we were talking about this and you said, remember that there is so much corruption. We have to see exactly how much stuff gets to the front, the quality of the actual kit and equipment and armaments and ammunition, because of the corruption that is endemic in this. In I was just about to say the Soviet system.
It is the same thing.
Exactly.
I mean, it is. No, the corruption has always been, thank God. I mean, you know, I normally have been fighting against corruption. You know, that's part of my work. In this case, thank God for corruption, because if there was no corruption in Russia's agencies, you know, they would have had a way stronger military and would have been a, you know, much, much bigger threat. The problem with Russia is, you know, the mentality, and you see the evilness of them attacking civilians as a strategy, you know, in order to try to break the will and have Ukrainians, and they do this around the globe, you know, to break the will of the people and have them just surrender in order to stop the attacks. So that is, you know, one thing Russia has is this brutality, the cruelty of trying to win a war or carrying out an operation by killing innocent people, not targeting military targets or, you know, strategic targets. Their strategic targets are the people.
That's right. So humans.
We will close humans. Off with this. And
yeah,
we'll
close
we
off
will...
with this. Thank goodness that they're, you know, that the corruption is rife. So, all right, Olga, that's it.
Yes, it is. Thank you, everyone. And we will see you next week.
Bye. Hi, everybody. If you enjoyed this podcast and you'd like to help us out with our independent work, please subscribe to Kremlin File on Substack and on our YouTube channel. Kremlin File is hosted by Olga Lautman and me, Monique Kamara. Our production team is headed by Maddie Kaparov, and the theme music by Orestes.